work as well, so I'm going to pass those round in a little bit. So the first question, Ben, tell us about your creative journey so far and what inspires you about using found and sustainable materials.
So I was really interested in found materials and just kind of like converting materials the whole way through, kind of from when I was studying at school to foundation, into my earlier years. So then I kind of thought it felt a bit like once you're on BA, like especially because you have the constraints of like the you learn all these machines, it felt a bit more like you need to go and buy a conventional yarn and kind of use conventional materials for a bit. But I'd still kind of incorporate different like elements within my project, so it was often like applying stuff with my knit at the end. But then went into my this year, so I had quite like a corporate year in Paris. So I was in knit at Kenzo and then back to Louis Vuitton. And I always kind of thought that, I didn't think that, but people say, you know, don't compromise your what you want to do with your ideas, like sustainability can come after graduating. Like, I don't know, quite a few people say that, which I disagree with. But then when I was in those positions and you're seeing kind of how these companies are operating, it made me feel really bad about what, kind of like how I was contributing to that, and it was just like no one's doing this, like in any of these companies, people aren't doing it. So I was like, okay, that was like the point for me where I was like, when I go back to my final year now, like I'm doing it how I want to do it, because like that is kind of what I want to do as well. It's not like I'm compromising at all. Like I find that a really interesting element in my design. Yeah. So like whether it's kind of through yarn choice, which then doesn't really like visually influence the piece, but because my collection was so like personal and conceptual, it meant I could really bring in these like found objects and materials which were really relevant to my concept. So it actually kind of elevated my knits to being something that was a lot more relevant to my concept than it would be if I wasn't using these found materials. So it kind of made sense on both like my moral standpoint, but also concept wise, it just really worked for me.
And why did you know, for you sustainability is important, but why is that? When did that kind of become something that you were focused on?
So kind of through just the way that I live, it's been like for years really. Like I don't know, like becoming like vegetarian when I was like 10, and then it then becoming vegan, and then just I don't know, it's just before even the pacing year, like I really don't buy any, like I really don't like buying new clothes, because I think really, when I buy it, when I was younger, it used to make me feel really good, but when I buy it now, I just feel bad, so I don't.
How do you get around that?
It's just all like charity shop stuff, because I find that more exciting anyway, because
it's unique.
Yeah, I love like buying, like thinking, it's about like going to these places and working in these companies, like seeing the research and stuff, like everything starts with a reference. So I kind of find it a lot more challenging and exciting to go and try and find what the reference piece would be rather than buying actual pieces.
Yeah.
It's always been important to me through that. And then again, like I said with the design, like it just kind of goes in hand with using found materials and being a student, because you don't have loads of money to buy stuff. So I just really like that whole like transformative process of taking something and completely changing its materiality in the way that it's viewed. I think is really where it comes from.
So let's pass some of these around.
Yeah.
So you're using kind of different components within your knit. So we'll pass some of these around.
Yeah. So
did this kind of idea come from?
So this is like the initial one. So again, it's kind of like applying things on top of my knit. So this was like a knitted wool, which I don't fell to, then rusted using water and vinegar and objects from my granddad's shed. Whipped in transfer as well as I thought. But then I kind of was applying the metal pieces on top with like a chain stitch, but then kind of taking that further, I wanted it to really be a part of the fabric, so kind of beading it onto my actual knitwear. So as I'm going on the machine, like lifting the stitches off, like looping it on and kind of threading it on after. So that kind of just changes the whole way the fabric drapes and kind of, depending on the yarn that I'm knitting it with as well, change where I can place it. So this one is the sample coming around here. And so the yarn is it's a tencel, so I don't know if you care about that, but that's like a a more ecological rayon because it starts as like a natural material. They add chemicals to it, but with rayon, a lot of the time those chemicals are then kind of expelled into the environment. But with Tencel, it's more of a closed loop process. They can purify the chemicals, use them again. So,
No, that's great. That's great. It's just understanding kind of your process. No, it's really good.
Okay.
So, you mentioned you were taking these found objects from your grandfather's shed.
Yes.
So that was part of your inspiration for in how you were turning your ideas.
Yeah. So like basically, I've been like down there with my granddad over the years, and then he passed away for like 7 years ago, and. Basically, I'm just really influenced by like what's going on with my family. Like, if there was a project, I'd just kind of go home and just like take it in turns to go through like different family stuff, like with their permission. But like just going through photos and stuff, and find it. Then because I've got a new project, I find something which I kind of sit through before that was then relevant. Mm-hmm. So then it would kind of jump out to me. So my grandma was just going on about how she wants to clear the shed, but my mum was whose dad it was. Was really funny still about kind of clearing it out, but she was happy for me to go in there so she could. And so he was like a kind of builder slash all-round kind of carpenter workman, like basically did a bit of everything. So he had like the general stuff in there, but he also I think was older because there was like loads of these washers in there which I kind of got in these samples, but then also like hundreds and hundreds of keys which I used in this part. So like obviously I don't think a normal person would really, well not a normal person, but you wouldn't really like, it doesn't really make sense to the key because you're going to have a lock that is going to unlock, but obviously that's fun for me. So basically throughout the year, like whenever London was a bit too much for me as well, I'd go home, go in the workshop, I'd work stuff, and again like at different stages throughout the project, like a new thing would kind of jump out to me or there was just so much to go through. So it's kind of just going over the same ground again and again until it's kind of fixing my head that it's using it. So I would take stuff up with me, but it just made so much more sense to go and kind of cover running.
So you always start from this kind of personal position. So
yeah.
Like you said, your family is your kind of main inspiration point and you're rubbing through their stuff. So that's your starting point, but then as you're developing your collection or your the project's kind of evolving, does it kind of expand into other areas as well?
Yeah, definitely. So it wasn't always, like I didn't always do it as something so personal, like through the projects during my BA we had so many, so I could try a lot of different things. But then when it came to like portfolio building, the projects that I wanted to talk about and the ones that I was most happy with and like most proud of and made most sense were always those ones. So that's why as it kind of got towards my second and my final year, everything was kind of moving more back to me because that's just how I work. But I do bring a lot of other things into it as well. So like my final collection was obviously, so it had the idea from my granddad's work shed. So a lot of work references were coming in. So it wasn't just, it was some items that I found in the shed, but then I found some really good books in the library at CSM. Where I was getting loads of good
guidance. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like the side of my mum's work came in because I found these type notes where my mum used to be an artist, and it was about her giving up being an artist to become a mum for me. So it wasn't like in a negative way that she typed these, like, you ruined my life, but it was, it just made me feel kind of bad, and like I really wanted to incorporate this into it because she kind of went into becoming a carer to get money. So I was then looking at the maternal, so I find it really useful as well to look at artists because I rarely look at fashion unless it's kind of for a specific garment reference, just because I really like, again, the challenge of turning something that's not fashion into something that is. And I say challenge, but sometimes it's easier to rather than just copy something. So. Yeah, like I've brought in loads of artists into my fan collection as well, so it all kind of goes out, but it all kind of comes under that overarching theme of like,
yeah.
Personal.
Yeah,
story.
Starting there, expanding out.
Yeah.
And I think, because these guys, this whole week is dedicated to research, so we've spent some time doing primary research and they're just about to expand to secondary research.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned to you, they're going to start with these kind of abstract objects and then it will expand, which is very similar to the way you've been working. I think it's interesting to understand your research process as well. So, you know, yes, it started with these abstract objects, but then it was about your relationship to them.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, your mother's artwork and then other artists that connect to it. You mentioned you did garment research, so and you wouldn't normally look at fashion. So you went into workwear, you're saying?
Yeah, so like in previous projects, I really like those little like portrait cards that you can get from like she used to go to Spitfields Market on Sundays, but I think she's more at like a Bermondsey market now. That's the last time I saw that. And there's this lady basically, and she's just got loads of these Victorian portraits. And so like it's not like it would tie into my style, but it's not like I'm making a Victorian clothes. But just there'd be elements of these garments which I really liked, and I really like the idea that I've gone out and just like found that and I've got this image. And I might be the only one to have this image. Because they're kind of tiny, so then I blow them up and I'd be looking at different elements and different details, whether it's like fabric manipulation or like collars and cuffs and just stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the photographer that did the work there, but that's when I say fashion reference, obviously when I'm looking at work there, it's still something on the body, so it's still technically fashion, but I just mean like I'm not looking at like a designer's finished product now, because I just think that's kind of their finished product, so why would I start with that?
And I think you can. It's much easier to translate historical fashion, uniform, workwear. As soon as you look at something current, it's already been translated into, like you said, like when you're working at different design studios, you're looking on their mood board and you're seeing those references that you would find.
Yeah.
So this is kind of something that hopefully you guys are touched with this. You can't really looking at fashion doesn't inspire fashion generally, and that means in a contemporary sense. I think it's almost something you can come to right towards the end of a project maybe, but not ever at the beginning, I think. It's sort of, as an inspiration point, it never really triggers new ideas because it's been translated. It's been, what's the word? It's kind of taken all the essence from those original thoughts and taken the best bits and used them in a kind of, you know, more original way somehow, but done through the eyes of the designer.
Yeah, and so someone else's design process. Like, so I just think with those kind of things, when you're a student and when you're kind of creating these collections as a designer, like you've been granted the opportunity to like create your own world and to create what you want. So I just think it's so pointless to then take something from someone else as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to fit in with the rest of the stuff. And so it's just completely taking away from the point of it.
Absolutely. And I think if you surround yourself too much of it as well, you kind of don't know what you're accidentally infiltrating. You know, because it starts bleeding into your work. And I remember sort of putting blinders on when I was designing to avoid anything that's out there. And then just tricky. Checking you haven't accidentally stepped on something else.
It is tricky, because you do just like see stuff. Like that's not bad thing as well. But it's just trying to bring in new things. So whether, like, if you're referencing something that has happened like recently, it's just about bringing in your new ideas and combining it with stuff so it doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Because like it's really tricky. Like
it is
you
hard.
Are, like influenced by.
Yeah. It's being aware.
Yeah.
But not looking too hard.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the aim. Okay, let's move to the next question. So today's conversation, we'll be discussing primarily materiality, experimentation, and material play. As a designer, you take experimental approach to fabricating your collections. What drives your experimental and sustainable approach? So we've covered some of those things, but maybe you could just tell us about the, you know, I think the words experimentation and play are really important when it comes to developing new ideas.
Yeah.
When you're sat down for developing samples, is that a really finely honed process, or are you just playing? Like, what's your kind of way of approaching that?
Yeah, so I kind of will, because these are kind of what I ended up working with in my actual thing, but I probably started with like 20 materials, or like, considerably more than what I've got here, and I was just trying different things out. So I think being a knit is really good, because a lot of what you can do is it's like very hands-on, and so it kind of makes you work that way. So when it comes to sampling, or when it comes to like designing garments or anything, I basically have to do stuff. I can't just like sit down and sketch some ideas because they're very like, they'll be very flat then, or they'll be very like, standard.
Yeah.
And I do like have a notebook, and I will kind of like jot things down as I'm starting a project, but then I quite like doing that because then by the end I can see what it would look like if I just kind of like leapt in with what was going on in my head then. I kind of have to build things and do things with my hands. So I ended up using this, not this, it changed kind of like the scale of it, but I made this big sculptural shape out of old kind of offcuts of acoustic insulation. So for this one I found it in my granddad's shed, and then my dad's actually a builder, so we managed to get bits from the site and kind of bring it to me throughout the year. But before I kind of did this, I've been to, it wasn't always going to tie into the shed from the very start of the year, so I was going to a lot of those scrap stores across London. I think there's one in...
Yeah, like, I've got the links.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's where I first kind of found foam as well in there, so I was using different materials like that and just kind of combining this with that. This is hand crochet, so kind of using a really big, thick hook, but also kind of using hand knit and combining materials, even just like binding things, just like seeing what works together. So it might not necessarily be the technique that I'm going to use to craft it at the end, but it's just the whole idea of starting to put materials and colours together. Like, I just can't do it until I do it.
Yeah.
So like on my foundation as well, I went to Brighton and it was kind of a bit different. You do those things, I don't know, but like where you get an image and you like colour pick from it, and like that was just so like a really bad way of doing it because it kind of flattened everything again. Like, whereas when I got onto BA, they kind of showed me how it's just literally going and like finding things, like gathering, like, being a collector and then putting these things together, because once you've got the real materials in front of you, it really changes it. Mm-hmm. So I know like a lot of you aren't going to be doing it, but like that doesn't mean that you can't like do something really amazing with the materials that you found.
Yeah.
Just like some way of connecting them and combining them, or like repetition of shape or just something like that. So yeah, it's very much like a dialogue that I have with the material. Some of them wouldn't work and I kind of have to buy them off, or some of them would work but need some development or needs to be combined with something else. So I've actually had a big sort through, because I had honestly like an IKEA bag of samples for my final year, but a lot of them really, really bad. I just kind of kept everything, just because it's really useful to kind of go, like for me over like last month I went home and sorted through it all, and it's just really useful just seeing what did and didn't work. So yeah, it's just completely different combinations and experimentation.
So I think the main thing I kind of summarise from that is you're surrounding yourself, you're collecting wherever you go, and that could be literally anywhere by the sounds of it. And you surround yourself with those materials and then play with them and experiment with them. And you know, this will give birth to an idea that maybe samples down the line might produce samples from this idea, you might produce 5-10 more that become the idea later.
And like before I got to crochet, it was like creating these little shapes, and like I was buying them while I found them shared.
And I think you're coming from a very kind of neat textile approach. I've kind of always worked more as a garment designer, not fabricating fabrics and materials. But I've kind of learned differently to, well, same as you, you kind of realise that you need to have all these things around you. I kind of used to do it the opposite way, design my ideas, then find fabrics, and then try and force the two things together. It actually is much more progressive that way, because you have to step back again, and then you have to realise what the fabric can do. So I think having those fabrics in the first, or whatever the materials are, having them in front of you feeds that design process, whatever it is. Whether it's just working with an existing fabric or making a fabric, it's just having it there.
Yeah,
I think that's the kind of, and that's what we're definitely trying to encourage with these guys, is just source, pull from wherever you go, and it doesn't matter what it is. It's like, I think there's an idea that you need to know what it's going to do at some point. You know, there's kind of this over intellectualizing that you need to have a material and have a conscious route for it, but I think, as long as it inspires you, it doesn't really matter. It's just playing with it, and it's turning into something.
And also, like I said before as well, like you might not see a use for it now, but when you're 2 weeks into the project and you found an image of the library,
yeah.
you'll go have a use for it.
Yeah.
So like if you've got the space to get like all of it, just keep it for the year and like just
yeah.
start collecting things.
No, totally.
And also like you said, about having the material there to kind of then, I can't remember how you worded it, but basically, like I said, I'm very three-dimensional, so I will have these samples or these like experiments, and then I'll begin kind of putting them and placing them on the body to then design from that. So I just find that's the quickest way and the way that makes sense for me. So yeah, like if you start creating these experiments and stuff, like don't be afraid to start like placing it.
Yeah.
And like
absolutely
drawing from it, collaging with it, and changing the scale of it, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So continually manipulating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can then get like 20 ideas from one thing.
Okay, sustainability is now an overused word and means something different to everyone. What is your translation of sustainability for your brand and just your work generally?
Mm-hmm. So, for me, I kind of had a couple of key points, which was either being like a natural, responsibly produced fibre or a recycled fibre. Or a reused fibre. So what I was using linens because it's much better than cotton. Unbleached British wool, so it just came in these ecru colours. The foam is obviously a reused material and the like metal pieces. The yarn on this one is the tencel from the seaweed waste from the cosmetics industry. This one was a hemp paper yarn, which I then tea stained. This one is a, and this one, the white and the beige is a British ecru wool, which is really thin, which has then been knitted into a tape, which I've then knitted with. And so on this one, I've tea stained it. And then basically, because so much of my design relied on stretch, and I really wanted that, and to not have that would really compromise what I was doing. Basically, I spent like months searching, because I kind of begun this whole sustainability thing on my placement year, where I could use that time to kind of look into it as much as I could, because I knew finding it would be a rash. There's a recycled lycra fabric, but not a recycled lycra yarn. So for the lycra, I use deadstock, so I'm not sure if that's a term you guys have heard of, but basically, it's where something might be like at an end of production, so it can't be sold for like no good company's going to be able to buy it because they can't get a repeat of it. So there was a yarn shop in Leicester that had some deadstock lycra, so I only ended up using like a cone in my whole collection, but that's where I get that from. And then I said earlier to you that these ones were kind of initial samples which I produced like, over a summer project going into final year, and then like kind of just with what I had from home. So these like, this is like chenille and kind of other random yarns, and this is like a not very nice paper, plasticky looking paper one. So just kind of using what you've got as well, like I think, especially for you guys when you're sampling, the most sustainable thing is to use something you've already got. Like rather than go out, like even if it's like the most organic pesticide free cotton ever, like if you've already got something in your cupboard that you're just going to use, and or like if you don't use it, you're going to chuck it out. Like just use it for example. Like there's nothing wrong with that. And so I've obviously like built up loads of yarns over the years, so I've still got a huge shower tool. So I still like just sampling. I'll just go into that, and then once it becomes then a garment, or if I'm going to need more of something, it's then when I look into getting the best possible version I can. So yeah, it's kind of reusing what you've got, recontextualizing an object. Or natural, responsibly produced. And so, obviously, I got all of my yarns in ecru. So, oh right. Also, the one with the rusty things on, that's going around in the beige, is a recycled polyamide as well. So, yeah, I got that sponsored by this Italian yarn company. But all the rest of my yarns, I was kind of getting in ecru or like natural black from a black sheet. So. I was then kind of taking on the dyeing process myself. So for the beiges, I was using tea and coffee. For the yellows, I was using turmeric. for the bright colours. I don't know if you've got a picture of my like skirt and top.
I don't know. I'll put that on the moment.
Yes, yeah, fine. So I wanted brighter colours in there as well, because I didn't want it to all kind of have the same tone which some of these natural dyes can give. So I actually used Kool-Aid Squash for that, so which is kind of worrying because it permanently dyes protein flavours. So I feel like it's probably not that good, but because it's an edible thing, I use that, and once I kind of put my fabric in there, it soaks up completely, so then what's left at the end is this clear water which is going down the sink, which is edible anyway. So basically every single dye that I used was edible. And
was that through trial and error that resisted?
Yeah.
I mean, so it sounds like there's no good Bible of using Kool-Aid, but like playing.
Yeah, it was just basically trying stuff. So again, I started when I was on my placement year, because I was in Paris, I had a suitcase of stuff I moved out with, so I didn't have all my design stuff. So when I would like go home for Christmas, I quickly like knit strip and stuff so I could cut that up as like dye tests. And then I was like peeling carrots, using red cabbage, which a lot of them didn't work. But it was nice to kind of have those experiments anyway, because it was really important in influencing the rest of the collection. And just like I rusted that sample that's going around, the velvet wool one, where it kind of just looks a bit brown and splodgy. I then, because basically in my research, I began by rusting paper, and so the objects would transfer so well and so clear, you could really see what each object was laid on the paper. And so I was trying to get that through my knit, but obviously I think because of the texture of the yarn, it just kind of goes blurry and just looks a bit dirty. So for that, I then kind of took that forward into trying rusting different fabrics. So then for my actual final collection, I ended up rusting, I was sourcing old linen Irish damask tablecloths. So they come with like gravy stains on and stuff, because I was getting really cheap at a market. But because I was rusting them anyway, like,
yeah,
you don't see that. And it would transfer as well as it transfers to the fabric. So it's just like, with the sustainability and with this kind of materiality, there's a lot of problem solving, but you're problem solving through any design process. So it's just kind of bringing that to the material as well, which I really like.
And I think actually what's interesting, the way you're talking about the process, from the time that I had my fashion label, that we were talking earlier about production is kind of the same thing, in the sense that if you're a small brand, you've got loads of leftover stock factoring, because you have to buy things in rolls and you never use a whole roll, then just financially you want to try and reuse it next season, so or the following autumn winter, or you know, to try and tie it in. And that's when you need to reinvent that fabric. So you either use it as a lining, or you dye it, or you cut it up in a really interesting way, or you combine it with another fabric in a really interesting way. So what's really interesting, so we definitely, you know, it's just the word sustainability has got a preaching element to it, obviously,
yeah.
And it feels like it's a big thing to take on, but actually a lot of those rules and ideas come naturally, and you know, anyone that decides to start their own brand will discover this, that you've got to work with what's around you, because you don't have a giant pot of money, and even if you do, it's going to run out. And you know, production is really, really expensive, and fashion shows are expensive, or whatever it is you're going to use to expose your work. And I think that's quite interesting. So even if you don't want to think about sustainability, you're going to anyway. You know, so it's kind of, you might as well make it part of the process from the beginning, and then it's just there. It's embedded in your process.
Yeah, definitely. And because so like sustainability, I'm not sure about like the exact definition, but it's basically like the development or like carrying something out in a way that you can carry it out in years to come, or in a way that supports you still continuing to do that in years to come. So like, there obviously is like the environmental element, which was important to me, but like you said, as a like young designer, you're not going to have big pots of money, so sustainability for you and the way that you're going to be able to carry your brand, because if you're not using materials thoughtfully and you're using them very wastefully or having to process away, like that's not a brand that's going to be able to support itself, and that's not a brand that's going to be sustainable in a business sense as well.
Absolutely. Okay, next question. So in your design process, when do you consider the materiality of your creation? So we kind of talked about that a bit, but maybe we just expand on that. You know, you're now producing for other banks. So Ben was telling me before, so he's now graduated. He's, well, maybe you can tell that part, so part of the way you're supporting your craft and living and earning money is now to produce for other brands. Yeah. So maybe you can talk about that a little bit and the materiality process involved there, because obviously it's not your own concept being driven. So
yeah, so it's obviously difficult because the market already is quite small. Well, okay, so basically about like the business that I've got with Louise is we wanted to have our own label, but kind of saw the market's quite saturated already, and we didn't really, like, we worked in smaller brands before, and we saw how the fun kind of gets taken away sometimes when you're having to kind of organize production, and basically it's like the interns that get to do the fun bit, like, which is the making, for us anyway, what we love was the making, working together. And so we thought, rather than do that, there's a lot of kind of small to medium London brands that aren't big enough to have an in-house knit in their collections. So we kind of wanted to go and work with these brands to be able to create one-off showpieces for their collections and add the dimension of knit. So it obviously depends on the client. So we've got like on our website and stuff that we've both got like a background in sustainability. So like if like you're interested in that, like we really like to bring that to your brand. Obviously the reality of it is that I'd say 50% are interested and 50% aren't, which I think is quite good. It's more than what I thought. So the ones that don't want it, obviously we can't really do much about it, but yeah, again, it's like similar to what we've just been saying, like one I'm doing at the minute, he's in the process of trying to change. He's basically had a brand for 10 years, and he's trying to now turn it around into being something which is more sustainable and responsible. Not to really put on the ticket and as a USP of the brand, because we've already got such a huge client base, but just for himself, because he kind of is feeling like bad that his brand is having a negative impact. So it's actually very similar to my process, where he's got a lot of there's like huge vintage like stock is up north that kind of supply all the vintage shops down here, where you kind of go and they've got these walls that you pull out which have got like 100 flannel shirts in, 100 corduroy trousers, like it's all like really organized. So he's working with them to produce his woven pieces, but then also I went into giving him a crochet lesson. And kind of from that, where I was saying you can crochet anything, because you can, we kind of got onto this thing of taking old t-shirts, because they sell really old t-shirts there that actually don't even get, a lot of the time don't even get into being sold in these warehouses, because they're kind of like, I've got like Fun Run on it or whatever, so they're deemed like not commercially viable, so they're kind of sent off. So basically now with him, we're turning those t-shirts into a crochetable yarn, and then also getting offcuts from like a, I don't know what it's called when it's a stupid shearing. Is that a tamarind? Whatever it is that sells sheep shearing, just getting offcuts of that and then connecting the two. So basically like knit is basically knit and crochet and macrame and all of that, a series of knots or loops that are connecting things. So his version of sustainability about reusing offcuts and reusing materials that are going to go to landfill, it worked really well for him. So we're creating a few pieces for him at the minute, kind of like showpieces for the show, but then also helping him source sustainable yarns. Who else have we got? Oh, Patrick, who was also going to come and speak with you guys today, but unfortunately he couldn't. Patrick McDowell's got a women's wear label. And we work with him and William McGann to produce hand knit pieces. So for him, sustainability was about it being biodegradable, so we were using natural wools, and another one was tencel mixed with a recyclable polyamide as well. So again, quite similar to the yarn that I was using. So that just obviously came through the yarn choice. And with kind of creating these one-off pieces, we're doing the labour, so we know that the labourer is responsible. It's not getting outsourced to some factory overseas and you don't know what's going on.
So you're very involved in that choice of material. They're coming to you for advice, partly. Yeah. And so it's kind of involved.
Yeah, definitely. But then it's hard because those clients are just going all that and we can't force that on them. And at the stage that we're at now, we're not in a position to turn away clients because they don't want it.
And if they come into you with their, they know what their yarn is, they're giving you their yarn, they're asking you to develop.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, what's really nice about the business is that it's so varied, like every single customer is completely different. But obviously that whole challenge. But yeah, like another one as well, actually a good example. He came to us wanting to use acrylic to create these like big helmet coats. Well, so the hours that we're going to go into this coat is like insane. It's going to like have to be sold for like £2,000. But then to produce that at an acrylic, like with an acrylic, which is such like a cheap yarn, it's like squeaks when you touch it. We managed to convince him to use wool, and we found wools for him that, like I said, I use dead stock. There's actually this really big yarn seller, not in Leicester, it's in Manchester, who gets all these end-of-line yarns and sells them for literally like a third of the price. They are non-repeatable, but he has huge quantities, so for a small London brand like that, you can go and buy everything you need for that season.
Yeah.
And it's dead stock.
Yeah.
So we managed to get wool from there for him for like a third of the price. So it was only a fraction of more than this acrylic yarn he was wanting to make. But we kind of sold it to him on that no one's going to want to pay £2,000 for a coat that's made of acrylic on the label.
And he was choosing acrylic because it was cheaper and therefore more sellable.
More sellable. But also, he didn't know about this place. So obviously once you've kind of got this expertise or like when you're used to using leftover yarns and dead stock yarns and you kind of know the places that you can source it, a lot of designers don't know about that. So that can be quite convincing for them. Obviously, if it was like a huge, like one of our first clients was Maison Kitsune, which is a Parisian brand, which is obviously huge. So, and they were kind of very set in what they wanted, so we kind of had to just do that. But for a lot of our other clients, are London-based small to medium brands, where like they can tell us what their order would be if they place an order. So we know like we can go and source yarns that aren't repeatable, but build their stock for this season.
Amazing. Okay, next up. So that's kind of answered that one. So where do you source your materials? What are the considerations when choosing fabric materials? So we've kind of covered some of that. The image is John Kowalki, really beautiful work.
I love it.
Yeah. So we talked about, maybe we can talk about it kind of more for these guys. So I think one thing, being a foundation student and BA, really you have basically the world as your oyster in terms of material, in terms of what you work with, in terms of fabric. The closer you get to production and sellability and all these kind of things, you need there's certain constraints you need to start thinking about. Like you said, like you might sell 100, you might sell 100,000, you need to have the capability to do it, so that's sort of a confine. Maybe kind of some advice for these guys, like how they can kind of think about materiality and maybe some of the ways you thought about it, foundation, BA kind of time, where you're pulling those things from.
Yeah, so I don't know, I feel like it's quite a CSM way, but like looking in the bin. like I don't know about this building, but like at the BA studios, they have like huge cages of them, which is like full of stuff, which is going to be chucked out. So. And also just like picking apart other people's toiles, like to get my toiles for my big blob that I made out of the yellow crochet, like they told me to use wadding, but I really didn't, because obviously that's quite plastic in. There's like eco wadding available, but it's really expensive and I don't want to spend money. So I was like, someone threw away a humongous like fruit machine that they made out of wadding. So like kind of just like taking that apart, repurposing it, and I quite like that. Kind of within my toile there are these seams which I've like hand stitched back shut on what their garment was, because it kind of is like it's really direct that I've reused, like it has a history already. I don't know. But kind of as a student, what would I do? Going through the bin, it's just what's cheap. So sometimes going to like the £1 markets at Mile End, if I want like a fabric, I remember I went there once in the second year because we were doing a project where we had to get all these cricket jumpers. And we had like hundreds of cricket jumpers there that were like £1 or £2 each. So just getting that and then just washing it on a really
and it's,
hot
that's
wash.
Dead stock essentially, is it?
Well, it's not, it's like second hand.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's vintage.
Yeah, vintage. Oh. But like, sometimes it's like grimy vintage. Yeah. You're like digging through these bins, but if you just wash it yeah. and you get back, it's fine. What else did I do? Obviously, I had the like luxury of this workshop where I could go and source stuff.
But I think if you wanted to work with like hardware and things like that,
yeah.
again, you, there are ways of finding it, isn't there? Like you talked about the scrap project place. Scrap store. So hopefully some of you have been there already, but that's the kind of place you can get those things
yeah.
as well.
They're more like kind of like art and craft.
Oh, you won't get hardware.
They might be, but they'll be new, which maybe you'll want. But obviously there are like, I never actually went, but I remember in one of my earlier years, I found this like metal recycling place, which was in central London, which sold stuff too. But I just think market's the best bet. Like
yeah.
Deptford Market, really good and really cheap if you go towards the end. And like, you're just not, like, it's kind of annoying because you're not gonna know what you're gonna find when you're there, but like, 9 out of 10 times you'll find something. So there's that, like obviously, like Spitalfields Market can be like a bit of a rip-off because they know, like it's kind of there as a bit of a tourist trap.
Mm.
It's nice to go and have a look and like sometimes you can find some affordable stuff, but I just think as a student, it's better to go to like Deptford Market or Bermondsey Market because stuff there is still quite cheap.
Mm.
And then again, like just charity shops, like for fabrics and stuff, you can get a garment which you can then cut up. Like just get a big garment and cut
yeah.
it up and use a fabric.
And bed sheets.
And bed sheets and stuff, yeah, literally.
Yeah, I used to
well.
Use it, yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Because I got some of the tablecloths from Market and then like as it got towards the end and I needed more fabric, I went on eBay and they had like the tablecloths on there with the gravy stains and stuff. Like it's just the same product. A lot of people selling at markets have stuff online as well. Like, it's this great resource, and if you know what material feels like, and you know what you're ordering, then don't be afraid to just order it. Like,
and car boot sales, actually. Just thinking.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And they're really good, and there's so many of those happening around London. I think, again, there's been a link probably been given, but
yeah.
we're obviously, as well, we're talking London centric. It's so much better when you get out of London
yeah.
for sourcing these kind of things. So, if you know, if you're not from here, it's maybe a bit more difficult to work out where to go, but in Brighton, like going to Brighton, going more, you know, more kind of location places, they have better boot sales, better charity shops, better markets, purely because everything's cheaper, and usually there's more old people,
yeah.
and better stuff then.
Yeah, in Brighton, there's like the best flea market every Sunday on the marina, and it starts quite early, like, go on a good day, actually, because if it's really rainy, like, there might be stalls, but if it's like a nice day, there'll be like 50 to 70 stalls, and a lot of them are actually doing like home clearances where they'll go fill up the van, and they don't want to load it back on the van, so at the end they'll be like everything's clean, so you can literally like, I got like amazing bags, like it's bad to buy, but it's old, so like crocodile skin bags like 20p and stuff like that, which is like just for myself, but like in terms of material as well, there was just so much there, it was honestly insane. And then if you are doing a charity shop and you don't want to go out of London, I really like Farrah in Angel, and at certain times they
yes.
do where everything in there's a pound or different stuff like that, or just go to the Mile End thrift store
yeah.
where they offer you to fill a bag or everything they have. And so, fill a bag, you get like nicer stuff, but you just gotta kind of like really roll it up and like cram it in the bag. But if you want to buy like coats and really bulky stuff, you go on the £1
I love the tips.
but yeah, I think that's it. Like,
yeah,
I'm just yeah.
It's about rummaging though. I think kind of a key word here is rummaging. Like, and it's a good thing to do at the beginning of a project. I think if you kind of get into a project and then you're like, right, I need specifically a blah, then it gets harder. Otherwise you have to probably buy it new because you can't fit the brief. If you start at the beginning of a project, surround yourselves and basically start a bit of a hoarding element in your life and, you know, roll it all up and stack it away. You probably don't have much space, but I've done exactly the same as you, as I've found fabrics in random places that I wasn't expecting, but I've carried them around for years. I still haven't used them, but I know I will one day. And it's kind of like, just keep hold of it. I think that's kind of, you know, as long as it inspires you, that's kind of the point. Even if it's not that project, it will affect another project.
Yeah. Even if you've got to like put them all in a box, like just take a photo of it, just put it in a box, and then have a little album on your phone, like materials in the cupboard.
Yeah, exactly. Such good tip. So, how does the materiality of your pieces affect the production or making process? So, that's maybe, again, one that ties really well to your business now. Or maybe you can relate to your final collection. Because you're creating the fabric itself, so that presumably denotes how you then construct it. Scale or whatever. So you can talk around that a little bit.
Yeah. So
it's kind of, I suppose, how does the material affect the production or the making process? So that maybe you kind of invented ways of putting things together. You know, your work's very abstract, so you're putting it together in a way that kind of suits you, that fits to your idea, creating your silhouette. And I suppose I'm thinking about how, you know, there's traditional methods of production, there's experimental methods of production. I would probably say you fit somewhere between the two. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. So, wait. So, like, obviously, I'll start with the collection.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it was a lot of me cutting things up and trying basically put it together in some way. And like we said, that would develop, like whether it be like a binding or embroidery or a crochet or a knit or whatever I was doing with it, and then kind of putting that on the body and finding a way to connect it. So I kind of had this weird like balance where if I was doing quite like something like this, or where I was using kind of like quite found materials, I then wanted the garment to have some constraints. So for the stuff like this, I've kind of fully fashioned it to be like a fitted body. But then for the stuff where it was more like a conventional knit, I then wanted the thing to be quite weird and abstract and kind of put together.
That makes sense.
So with this, I would kind of knit pieces and then I would just literally work directly on the body.
So just to summarise before we kind of carry on, so because this is an abstract kind of creation, the way you're combining material, it's a more abstract approach. You're then using more traditional knitwear kind of elements to the construction.
Yeah, just to get it to get a balance on the details and it's weird balance. But I didn't really do it intentionally.
Yeah.
I think it's just how things happen. Except for obviously the big blob which is out that phone. I kind of liked combining like the traditional craft of knit with then this weird material. And so I am so craft based as well, so and with knit it gives you like the freedom to form something. So the blob, obviously I just formed it as I went, which was kind of more like sculpting. Like I had to do a twirl for my life, but I didn't cut the twirl up and use it as a pattern. Like I formed it like as if you made a bottle out of clay. Whereas with this, because I wanted it to kind of have no waste, and I'm not really going to be able to overlap that anyway because it's made of metal, it was all fully fashioned. So
fully fashioning is, can you explain just
that's when you, yeah, of course. So that's when you're shaping your knitwear into your pattern pieces. So you can see like this was just like, I fully fashioned it as if it was kind of like day before tonight. But like it's just shaping your armholes and everything. So in that sense, knit is really easy to become zero waste because you can literally, you're not getting a roll of fabric which you're cutting a square of like a t-shirt out, or you've got this as a bit of waste unless you incorporate it in some clever pattern kind of way. You can literally form anything in any shape with knit. So that was another real key thing. The only thing that I did want to cut and sew was this unbleached wool, because I figured that if I'm just like, it's going to come across the way, and it's going to come
So brother, so there's traditional methods of construction, which you guys can, you know, if you want to introduce those in any way, that comes through, you know, researching existing garments. You know, one of the best ways of doing that is
go to a charity shop, find a garment you like the construction, it's maybe more tailored or it's a knitwear piece, and understand, you know, observe the way it's made. You know, that's a good way to learn that.
But equally, you might be working with a material that's very untraditional, and then sculpting might be the better way to do it. So I think that's what's quite interesting about your process. It's like traditional methods, sculpting, it really kind of depends on the material, and that will lead you. And I think, you know, I've certainly had students with their final outcomes on foundation have stapled together kind of this found plastic type of material because it was the easiest way to connect it. But the staples became deliberate. And I think it's about conscious decision, not just, oh yeah, I used a glue gun, or oh yeah, I just used a bit of shit sellotape. You know, as long as there's a choice in that process, I think that's essentially kind of what I'm saying. It's like, it's kind of making those choices as you go.
Yeah, like, I just think it can be a shame if you've got a really interesting material and you've got a good brain that's a problem-solving brain. It just seems like a bit of a shame to like solve joining something by like just gluing it together when there's so many ways out there. You've probably got so many really good materials that you can use to connect it in some way. But yeah, it's difficult because like there isn't like a rule. It's just whatever works for you. And like, I obviously sculpted the big blob shape, but then I guess actually when I'm creating panels of this in different shapes, and I'm then working with it on the body and kind of joining, like tacking it by hand and then linking it or crocheting or however I'm doing it, I guess that's kind of like sculpting on the body as well. Like,
yeah. So then, a different drink.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like a weird, yeah, invention.
It works really well. And I think, you know, you said it's difficult because there's so many processes, but I think that's the positive. You know, there's no right or wrong to it. The only wrong is non-conscious kind of, you've got to consider it. Whatever it is, it's a choice. And I think that's, you know, you might end up using this really random method that then when you turn it inside out, it's even more interesting. And then you just leave it and turn it inside out. You know? So I love the interior of garments. So I get really excited by kind of how things are constructed. So it's definitely something I think.
Yeah, I haven't actually got that anything, but I did another embroidery one, but basically the back was nicer. Like, yeah. That often is the case.
Totally.
With stuff where like it's just,
Yeah. It's the same like dyeing or printing stuff,
turn it over and up. Oh, yeah, and the thing I'm doing as well with the shearling, where I'm connecting it, I did it and then the guy actually really liked the inside, but because I crochet, like, I basically crochet around the shearling, then I crochet the negative space, and then I crochet, like, connect the two with crochet. So because it's got this reversibility, like, and because of the way that I connected it rather than just like, it would be so much quicker for me just to crochet a block and pop the shearling on top, but like, because I've done it in this way, you really like the back of it, so it means that you can use it. So yeah.
No, exactly.
It's flexible.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point. Okay, as a sustainably conscious designer, how do you visualise the future of the fashion industry or your brand and the materials we use?
Okay.
Big one.
That's right. I can see like the fashion industry going into, especially like the commercial side of it, kind of, you're starting to see it now where they're almost buying their way into sustainability, where they're like offsetting their carbon by paying money to plant trees, but like everyone kind of slated that, but I guess that is quite a good thing. Or like even high street brands now, like I don't know if you've seen like Zara and that saying that kind of over the next few years, certain percentage of their garments are going to be made from recycled materials, which again is positive, but you kind of hear things about where these recycled materials come from, and obviously like I'm sure you're all really familiar with greenwashing, and so like someone told me a story about this place and they literally took a nice fabric, blended it up to recycle, to make it into a recycled thing, and then kind of like resplit it, so just like it was really obvious because they were putting
a fabric. They added a process.
They just added a process just so they can say it's recyclable. So obviously like you kind of hope that's not what's going on, but yeah, I don't know, it's obviously a really consumer driven industry. But it seems like it's the slowest to respond to the environmental issues that we're facing. I don't know, I feel like food went organic a really long time ago, But maybe that's because a like, quite high percentage of consumers are saying that they're not happy to eat the chemicals that are in non-organic food. So I think as people are now, like me, starting to maybe feel bad when they buy an item of clothing, especially if it's an item of clothing that they think they're going to throw away after not very long or not wearing anymore, I think that will begin to change. I'm hoping that there'll be like more of an emergence of like more mid-market brands. So that kind of, because obviously the high-end brands really, what's the word, like aren't open for everyone, because obviously there's such a high price point, but the low price point brands are so much lower than what they used to be 20 years ago. So I'm kind of hoping that if the prices of the low market go up, but with that the quality rises, would be a really nice thing. And I think it could naturally occur if people do stop buying this really and cheap, massive, cheap, bad stuff.
And you talked about, you know, you're working with some, you know, smaller to mid-market brands, and certainly when I had my brand, I kind of got to that mid-point. It's one of the most difficult places to stay. Not that you're, you know, not that you're getting loads of customers that make you try and make you big, it's just the mid-section is so long.
Yeah.
You stay in it for such a long, long, long time, and you have to kind of try and balance your costs and your output and all of that. But it's the toughest area that just seems to disappear the quickest, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I think if mid-market products can be supported in any way, I suppose. Because it's, you know, it's maybe easier now because online shopping is so much bigger. So maybe that's a way of
helping. Yeah, definitely. And I think just like, it sounds silly, but because it is such a consumer-led thing and such a marketing-led thing, although I agree with this client like that I've got, like turning his brand as sustainable as possible and doesn't want to put it like on the label, he's just doing it for himself, like people do buy into it, and I think it's a thing that should be advertised as a USP, because I think the more it's advertised as a USP and the more people buy into that, the more it's gonna then the whole industry's gonna kind of shift. And so yeah, in terms of my like how I would do it as a brand or how I'm doing it with the company that I've got at the minute, it's just like constantly using that place in Manchester wherever I can. For like a price point for an emerging designer, so reasonable. Secondly, like it just makes so much sense just to use some of the materials. But obviously I discovered so many really amazing yarns through my collection, and I'm grateful that I had that place in the area where it was so corporate, because I had access to all of their supplies and stuff and could go all the way on cards and find like the 0.05% that were like sustainable and interesting. So I think I could just see myself continuing to use them, because for like a mid-market or a small brand, the price difference isn't even that much. It's just really shocking. But for like a power-hungry, money-hungry, capitalist diet, like a little tiny difference, once you kind of multiply it by the numbers, does make a big difference. So I think it's just kind of like, yeah, not leading by example, because that sounds like really like preachy, but just like showing, like still producing the way that I want to produce and showing that there's a market.
Yeah, just continuing to pursue it, essentially. Yeah. I did actually hear recently, I can't remember if I heard it or read it, I don't know if it's true, that out of the big polluters, fashion being the biggest in the world, it's the only one to make the most changes. So, which I find really inspiring, because we've talked a lot about sustainability so far on the foundation, and it is such a gloomy kind of outset.
Yeah.
But this, especially because this industry is just producing, constantly producing, that for me was kind of a really interesting fact to hear. You know, when you think of, I suppose, the other big polluters of the big fossil fuel giants, then fashion is clearly, you know, there's a market in fashion to do this, so there is a positive in there, I think.
Yeah.
And the fact that it doesn't involve such huge change, you know, it's just about if you start it from the beginning and make it part of your process and part of your thinking, then, you know, for you it's part of the inspiration. It's not even like, these are my restrictions. It's, you know, it's
an end of that.
Yeah, it's almost a gaming kind of idea. Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, it's obviously this really fast paced business, so. And there's the expectation to deliver like these really frequent connections, but I obviously had that time before I went into final year, like I said, to work on this, because it does take time, and I wanted to not have to do this huge rush. So yeah, I don't know, I think things will come just us, like, so because it's hard, like they're already asking us, you know, doing as much as they can, so to add this in as well and still produce without taking a break, it's just crazy. Time. So I think as well for me, like one of the things I learned from doing little internships in London, and one of the things that I noticed that I really liked was that Claire Barrow just stopped being part of that cycle, so she could just produce stuff as she wanted,
more realistic.
Which just makes sense, because like with that, everything changes, because like the waste changes, because you're not producing huge amounts of, like a one big collection at one time. Like she just basically makes stuff. She had the Instagram platform to put it up, and someone would buy it the next day, which I think was a really nice kind of structure in a nice way. Like it was really nice seeing something you made literally the day before get sold and then you sent off to the client that bought it the next day. Like, I found that really rewarding, so that's something that I would want to do as well, and that's something that me and Louise are doing, where we're just kind of making pieces that we ourselves would like at a rate that suits us, and just like putting it up at these random points, because like it doesn't need to be this huge like show or this huge, like you need to constrain yourself to that. Again, it's like a constraint, and everyone goes, oh, but you have to show it at a fashion week, because if you don't, like, you're not, like, no one's going to see it, but actually, when you're showing it at fashion week is when the market's at really saturated. So like, I don't know, what's, like I just think, yeah, if you're putting stuff out and you do it and you want to put it out, like it's such a big step, and it's like only positive for yourself because you're not having to like be crippled by these deadlines. So.
And just inventing a process that suits you.
Yeah.
That you enjoy.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, you mentioned earlier on, you know, starting your own brand, it very quickly becomes something that has little enjoyment, because you're just looking at spreadsheets and you're just working out, you know, you're meeting with factories and blah, blah, blah. And that is interesting for a couple of seasons, but it kind of dies away really quickly. And, you know, you're doing your designs while sat on the bus going to a factory. You're not spending hours luxuriating in design. You know, it just doesn't happen. So reinventing a very outdated industry to suit you, I just think makes a lot of sense.
And also, like, turning into like just turning into a positive thing.
Yeah.
Like with the stuff that we're looking at, me and Louise are developing some stuff too, that we're really worried about, not the quality of the product, but that everything's not gonna be the same. But then we're like, actually that's a really good thing, because like who wants to, like no one goes to buy something from a shop because it's your fashion, like with influencers, or you do want exactly the same to what they've got. But like just turning on its head and using that as a USP.
Yeah.
Rather than that, oh, sorry, they're not all the same.
Yeah.
It's they're not all the same because they're all made by me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's a good question. That's a good book to end actually. So, questions? Any questions for Ben?
How long have you been
working on this? So, the reason I started it actually just before we had our pre-show, because I did like our last client, that was in June. So it hasn't been very long, but been a bit full on, so because we were really wanting to work on our own stuff as well, but we just haven't really had a chance yet. But yeah, we'll be that next year off.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's just you've hit the ground running and it's worked.
Yeah,
it's really positive. Question for you first.
So I wanted to ask you, if you don't find some time, you don't find coffee in the fact that although you're sustainable. Although we have like all those recycled fibers and environmentally friendly fibers, the reality is that we're still producing so much other things. And we're just trying to completely, I don't know, because sometimes I think of, I base myself and I don't think it would be better for me to just not do anything.
Yeah, so I've heard that before as well.
Yeah.
But then, I think you're contributing something to culture for a start, but also if you're not producing it in a way that you know is ethical or however you're producing it, a client with money is going to go and buy it from somewhere else, and the other place they're going to get it from probably isn't going to have that. So I think you don't want to look at it in that way, you want to look at it in a way of like, filling the industry with positive things,
yeah.
rather than you don't want to contribute anything to a negative industry. I think that's not going to change anything.
No,
it's just going to be the big companies that don't care about that sort of stuff are going to
keep it bigger.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I've had that thought too.
Yeah, me too.
Because
I'm
it's bloody overwhelming. And it's like, okay, well, if I keep putting stuff out there, then where does this end? But we're humans. We need, as long as there's humans, there's art, there's culture, there's, we have to, we can't stop it, it's an instinct. We need to wear clothes, you know, so those are all factors. And they can be the point that inspires you. And I think then, as exactly the way you're working, as other designers are working, every designer that's kind of considering this as a way of doing it, but it might just be one aspect you decide to consider, where it's just the ethical aspect or whatever it is, but there is always still using it. You know, it is a conflicting idea, but I think you can't stop yourself. That's the other thing. You know, as long as we are here, we're not going to be able to stop ourselves producing and designing and creating, and it's kind of what makes our society work as well. So yeah, I think it's, don't let it just be H&M.
Yeah,
it needs to be something else. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know you said one of your first clients was like Maison Couturier and stuff. I'm just sort of curious, because you said you haven't been doing it for a very long time, how did you get noticed effectively as a company to start with?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like you've sort of just gone straight into it and hit it big time.
So Maison Couturier was through people that I met whilst, because I had my year where I was in Paris for the year. So it was through people that I met there who, once we started this, we started an Instagram, and basically it was like word of mouth. Someone I met there, their friend was amazing consumer, and it was
just
like that.
Like, you know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's the classic way.
It really, like, so many of the jobs come that way, which is good. Like, it is nice because it makes sense. It's such a saturated market, even for people like knit designers, where you're going to go with someone who someone else knows and says are good. So that's like a really good way. And so it makes me kind of regret a bit that I took the whole year in Paris, because a lot of my like feelers and everything are out there, whereas I would like it if I had more around London. But basically, so after we did Maison Couturier and Patrick, I've known before, so we did Patrick. We then kind of just reach out to different brands, like by email and by Instagram, because by that point we've got enough product on there where it looks reputable, and that's kind of where
there's kind of
layer things left from. Yeah, and then also I did show actually my graduate collection at British Fashion Council has a positive fashion space at Fashion Week this year, so I showed my graduate collection there. So again, I met a lot of really good people there. So stuff's kind of come from that as well. So it's just kind of like being present at things really does help too. So it's just like a combination of the two, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the market being kind of oversaturated, and I get that completely, that's how market cycles work, and continuously growing and everything. When do you think it's going to decline? Like, as an idea, because it can't continuously get more oversaturated. There's going to be a downfall.
I can't see it.
I think it's always going to be good, because it's like it's such a broad market as well. It's like saying it's almost like saying that like the entire like neuter market is, like oversaturated, but like within that you've got like those bikes or like cars and all like,
yeah.
Like within that so much. It's such a broad thing. There's like conceptual fashion, there's high street fashion, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, so I just think, and it's such like, yeah, I don't know, I can't see it.
No, as long as there's more people, more graduates,
yeah.
And more, you know, but I think, it's one of those really overwhelming ideas, isn't it? It's really oversaturated.
Yeah.
You get out there, how are you going to make the impression? How are you going to, when you set up your Instagram and you put your product, how is anyone going to see it? But I think there's this kind of anxiety that you need to do it really quickly, and actually that isn't the same way. And it's about getting out there and meeting people. If you did internships, that was really positive for you. Same for me, in fact. But it's about getting out there and meeting people. it's just really pleased about meeting people every time. I've never heard, it obviously happens via your website or via your Instagram as well, but a lot of the time it's recommendation, and it's constantly pursuing what you want to be pursuing, putting it out there. It does happen, it does work, even if it's slow.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be with tiny companies and then progress. You just, everyone has their different way of doing it, and it will happen differently for everyone. But even if you carve a small niche which enables you to afford to do more of it, it doesn't matter, does it? You know, it's like, it's not even necessarily about the big brands, you know. They're not what sustain you necessarily. You know, they're good for your profile and they'll come eventually, but you know, these things take time.
And also, it's just like, you're the only person with your voice and your design process and your brain. So
yeah,
it might, like, even if it's really saturated, like, it's almost like with a singer, like, there's so many singers, but everyone's got their own voice, and so it's like, you don't go, oh, there's even singers, so don't have a singer.
Yeah.
Like, you still would just try it. So it's just, yeah, it's, if you've got, like, a passion for it, and you've got something to say, like, through your work, then definitely, like, you still
more questions? We'll get back to you.
Yeah, so I do knit, so we don't, there's no fashion weave course, there's only a textiles weave at CSM. But on fashion knit, yeah, so it's kind of, you started in first year and had 3 or 4 weeks on the domestic knit machines with the tutors, and then, which is kind of like technical skills, and you kind of make an accessory at the end of it. And then you have like your initial pattern cutting for a week, your initial sewing for a week, and then once you've done that, everything's kind of learned through projects. So you'll have like your first cut project where you'll kind of have the basic skills in your head, but then you'll work with pattern cutters to develop that. So it's like, I always say it works in your favour because you learn different things to everyone else, because you're obviously pursuing your own avenues. So like, everyone will know the basics of using the machine, but then it's up to you what you're pursuing with each project. So it's not like there's a separate like skills day and a concept day. Like, it's all interlinked the whole time. And so first is all about using the domestic knit machine, which is what I use for these. And then once you get to second year, you again have like 3 weeks technical skills on the Dubé machines, which are like the really big ones, where they're quite difficult. So everyone kind of just makes trims because it's all you can get off them. But then again, like, you use them, it's kind of up to you what you use, but your tutors will be like, use them for projects. And so you just use them throughout second year and work with the technicians to again develop what you want to develop. And so, yeah, it's not like, because I always compare it to at LCF, where you'll have like the technical days and you'll create tech files. You won't do that at CSM, you're kind of like learning the job, like you learn whilst you're doing conceptual projects. But yeah, everything I knitted, I learned at CSM.
Questions? Anyone?
Yeah.
I was wondering, the shop you said in Manchester, do you have the name?
Yeah, I do, I always forget it.
Can students access it?
Yeah. So basically, he's really good. I've actually not gone up there yet because it's quite expensive to train. But if you send him like little like snippets of a yarn, he can usually match it, because it's honestly like, it's as big as CSM, like the thing I've heard, like it's humongous.
Do you have to buy quantity?
No, it's fine. It's something like a kilo. It's a minimum of a yarn. Like, you probably won't want like loads of students being like, one of this.
Yeah.
Like, do it if you want to kind of get. Maybe if you want a yarn in like one colour, then you want to get quite a lot, it's quite good. Or maybe join up and get some together or something like that. So
we'll get the name afterwards,
yeah,
and put it up.
Yeah, I'll do
that. If you don't have the name, but the other market that you point out that you tell us,
which
the
one?
Deptford,
the one with all the drawers, that one.
Yeah.
Different garmented drawers.
Oh, that one. I don't know the name of that either. But what I'll do is I will get it and I'll send it an email to you.
Okay.
So you give it out. I'm really bad.
No, it's
I can expect it. Gonna get a few more energy, but yeah.
okay, so I have a question. Sometimes it's kind of difficult to like maintain like your integrity when you're a sustainable designer? Like, because you try, because the opportunities that come to you aren't sustainable. Like, how do you go about that? Like, how do you try and like stay like where you belong? You know?
Well, it's not really where you belong, it's just like where you want to be. So, yeah. like I said, with other clients that we've got at the minute that don't want it, like, I'm not in a position to, at the minute, to like turn away work if they want something out of Lurex, I'm going to make something out of Lurex. So, I don't know, it's just, what kind of opportunities do you need?
Because, for example, like, right now I'm, like, in a modelling agency kind of thing, like, and they, it's, like, a really not sustainable company that's, like, asking me for work, and I'm, like, I really don't want to do that, because it's really not, like, it goes against my beliefs, so, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's just kind of, like, you have to weigh it up in your head, and just,
yeah.
Like, because, so basically, since I finished, they asked me to go back and work at the LD Bags. But I weighed up in my head and I just thought I was so not happy there with what I was doing, so I'm not going to be happy doing that. But then if, and which is really selfish, but then if it's just like a mod, like if you need to do it for money to support your work and your education where you're doing sustainable stuff here, then you kind of have to just weigh up and think it makes sense. But if you can not do it, obviously.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, when I produce work for Greenpeace, which is more kind of prop-based work, you think about how they, so they're obviously all about positive output. They understand, which I kind of had to learn from them, they understand that not every single thing they put out would be completely sustainable, and always be ethical, obviously. But so when I've made giant props or whatever for them, they know that I'm going to have to engage with some plastics or some, what, you know, different materials. But it's for the greater good, and I think if your greater good is supporting you financially to do this or put out your collection which is sustainable, then yeah, it's not perfect, but you'll get closer to it. I think it's a balance, isn't it? It's your conscience as well. It's like how much you can sleep through at night.
Yeah.
If it makes you stay awake all night,
probably not.
More questions? Yeah. Okay, total ID. If you can't hear them as well when we're saying them, put your hand up or something, shout, and then we'll make people louder. Yeah, exactly. Cool. You have a question?
I have a question, but I've also realised, like, because during UK businesses, I was wondering, like, is Brexit going to affect your supply chains or sourcing, or are you prepared
for that? So, summarise, how is Brexit going to affect you? Get in there, give me some.
I think it's going to be such a nightmare because Louise and I don't have that kind of brain, and we've tried like looking up, it's so confusing. We, like, one of the guys that we're doing it for at the minute though is in New York, and so at the minute it's okay because we did samples, sent them no commercial value. Now we're producing his show garment. Not 100% sure what's going to happen, whether we've missed it, no commercial value or what. But then, yeah, I don't. It just makes
then,
it so hard.
Interestingly, when I was working for a Japanese brand years ago, the way they got, I mean, there's ways of getting around everything. So they just used to fly, it was cheaper to fly with the garments. So it's just like your suitcase is the collection and you fly them. You know, there are ways around everything. You know, and we used to have much more expensive import export taxes. So, yeah, but I think that's probably the main way for you to get in and out of the country.
Yeah, it's scary, I don't know, really, basically.
I don't think we know anyone. Any more questions? Yes?
Why did you choose not to go on to an MA?
So just to repeat, why did you choose not to go on to an MA?
So I had the interview, and I've got in, but I spoke with Fabio after, and So I applied to do it at CSM after, because I didn't want to leave. It's kind of sad. But I spoke with the course director after because I always knew that I wasn't going to do it this year, just because the BA really tired me out. And I just wanted kind of a bit of time to get myself back together again. It was such like, not physically tired me out, but it was such like, because it was such a personal project, it was such like a huge investment. And I know it's such a quick turnaround, whereas with the BA you've got like 3/4 years where you're doing other projects and learning. But the MA, it's like under a year and a half, and you basically start a new production. And so I just thought that I'm not ready to do that yet, and I wanted to give this thing a go for these. Because at the end of the day, this is like, what I'm doing now is what I wanted to do. So if I can get there without an MA, I feel like I may as well do that. So it's definitely like, I spoke with Marco and like explained what I was doing this year. So he's kind of like, he respected that I just didn't want to rush into it, because again, like with anything, it's a lot of money, so like you can't like force someone to rush into that.
What are you thinking at this stage? So you've now progressed in your earning money and you're working. How are you now? Are you gonna come back to the MA? You're not sure?
I can't see myself doing it this year. It just seems like I know that I'd have a really good time, and like I'd have enough platform to show the reflection, which would be absolutely amazing. But I just feel like I've kind of done it, and I'll just be doing it again, and then I'll just do it, stop, and then come back and do what I'm doing now. So it just seems like this really random step, and like I can't afford to do it anyway, unless I got a big scholarship. But like it just doesn't make, I just don't think it really makes sense.
And it's a personal choice as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
But finance is coming to that personal choice.
Yeah.
But I do. I'm a big advocate of, and I'm sure you thought it on your internship year as well, like being out in the world and doing it real world version, you know, you gain so much. It's not to say an MA isn't amazing, because it is,
but
it is quite luxurious time, I think. It's like, you get to improve on BA and do things differently, but is it, are you gaining value for you and for what you're output will be as a designer in the industry.
Yeah, well, like, also, like, by the end of placement year, I had such a corporate year, I was, like, desperate to get back to CSM and start, which was, like, such a nice feeling. So I was just like, okay, if I want to do the MA, I really want to stay, like, I want to be, like, I want to be here. I'm desperate, I've got something I need, because, like, I want to make this, so I know. Or, like, I've got an idea I need to see. But at the end of BA, like, I just felt like I could have the years, then by the end of the year, if I feel like that again, then I'd go back.
Absolutely.
It's just such a nice like way to go back and then look forward to like the long hours again, and not be like, oh, I've got to do like 16 hours of work today. It'll be like, okay, thank God I'm not doing 8 hours and not this. Like, I'm going to do 16 hours of something that I really love and want to do.
Any more questions? Wrap up there. So, thank you very much, Ben. So, as usual,